have been with economic organizations, have been with organizations that are very different from Guns Save Lives. But the question you always ask at the beginning is, what do you care about right now? What could make your community better? What did the people say to you when you asked that question?
Well, we expected them to talk about concealed carry law or gun legislation, but they said jobs. So, I mean, the economy and job creation is at least on the front of pretty much everyone's mind from what we've been hearing.
Right. That was the very first thing they said. It's a theme we've been hearing in other community conversations. And then they did go into public safety and the right to bear arms.
So let's talk about public safety issues pertaining to firearms at the moment. Obviously, the big news regarding firearms in Illinois is the upcoming deadline regarding concealed carry. By June 9th, that's the court-mandated date by which the state is supposed to have passed some kind of concealed carry law or some kind of law regulating where people can carry guns in public. What did Guns Save Lives have to say about this? What did the members have to say about concealed carry?
Well, we were surprised that when we were talking with some of the people that were there, there was an organizer who pulled out a fanny pack that just looked like a fanny pack that you would take around to an amusement park or something. And he had a gun in it with ammunition. It just wasn't loaded. So, Kimberly, you want to talk about that,
right,
too?
So, basically, concealed carry is a law that would make it legal to carry a gun on a person with bullets in it. But right now, you can carry guns on you as long as the ammunition is separated and it's in an official case, something that qualifies as a case, and this varies by county. So first of all, people are among us with guns and bullets walking around, but they're separated, and that's legal. So what they want, though, is they want Illinois to be the 50th state to allow concealed carry, and they think that that is imminent, that it will happen.
That's so interesting. It seems like a workaround in a way, but of course that is legal to have a gun with bullets separate, I guess, on your person.
Yes, I emailed Mike Metzler, who's the chief of the Mahomet Police Department, just to be sure on that, and he said indeed that is true.
That's so interesting. Well, some people might think that gun rights advocates are people who support more broad, I suppose, looser restrictions in terms of where a person can carry a gun might be okay with passing the deadline by June 9th without having legislation, because there is a legal argument that if nothing is done by that deadline, there's going to be no restriction on where people can carry guns in public. But you found that there was somewhat more support for passing some kind of law by June the 9th.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. The people that we talked to, they wanted something passed. I'm not sure that they really anticipated that it would be, that there would be something that would happen before then. But several of the people that we talked to had permits to carry, concealed carry in other states, and just didn't have one in Illinois. So one of their big issues is that they wanted to be able to legally do that in their home state.
Kind of have no ambiguity in that sense.
Right. Right.
Absolutely. In terms of what's the incentive for gun owners and people who are supportive of gun rights to have a concealed carry law passed? Why were they supportive of having a law for Illinois?
We didn't delve too deeply into that, but I think if I read between the lines, it's about civil rights and about the Second Amendment and believing that. They did say, we asked them about public safety because it came up as a concern, and we said, what's your relationship between yourself as a gun owner who wants to be able to carry a loaded gun and police, which are another group that promotes safety? And one of the gentlemen told us, you know, that we're a police officer's best friend. We have a gun. We practice. We know how to use it. We're there when a crime happens. We want to be able to defend ourselves, our loved ones, and people in the public. And, you know, we're there first. And so that's sort of how they saw those two themselves intersecting with the police and public safety. And concealed carry would let them do that.
Of course, talking about guns recently, it's hard not to discuss some very public shootings that have happened that have really affected media coverage around firearms recently, specifically Newtown, Massachusetts, which it's very hard not to think about when we're talking about gun ownership and concealed carry law. Did Newtown come up when you were speaking to members of the organization?
Well, yes, we did ask them about that, and we got several different responses. The people we talked to do support teachers having guns in the classroom. I asked under what circumstances would that be, and basically the response from one gentleman was the same as the right to vote. You need to be 18, and you need to be a U.S. citizen. You should be allowed to carry a gun in the classroom. I asked about training in terms of that, and they didn't feel limitations such as that would be necessary. And which is interesting because their organization, Gun Safe Life, focuses a lot on training and safety. And we asked, for example, if someone wanted to own a gun, you know, what's the first thing you would tell them? And in addition to getting their permit, they talked about taking gun safety classes.
Right. And one of the really interesting things that one of the guys we were talking with, he said, when we asked him that question, he said, well, we trust teachers to take care of our kids all day, and we trust them to shape young minds. So why wouldn't we trust them to have the ability to protect our children if they needed to? Which I hadn't really considered that before and thought it was an interesting perspective on that issue.
Absolutely. Well, as members of the media who are coming to speak to gun owners, I mean, there's been something of a strained relationship recently between people involved in the media and people who are Second Amendment absolutists, so to speak, or people who really do support gun rights. How did you find them to be in terms of their reception of you as reporters?
I think when we got there, they were a little bit suspicious, and I think maybe they're, if you don't feel you're well represented, you're automatically going to be suspicious. And so I think they had a lot of concerns about there are groups of people who are gun owners, the people who have guns illegally, who don't use them properly and aren't trained. And then they said, but we're the gun owners who have been through these safety courses, have all the legal paperwork that we need to have in order to carry a gun. And so they really resented the redneck stereotype, and they really felt that they'd been lumped into that category.
Right. They said in the media do a really bad job of portraying the average gun owner in the U.S., that this idea of being macho, you know, the idea of being a redneck, they wanted us to know that the almost 200 people that were at their meeting last night are, you know, educated, they are teachers, they are doctors, they are farmers, and they wanted us to know that. And they said the media really do not help in terms of people's understanding. And they talked about, you know, statistics. They gave us some statistics, and I checked them to see if they were accurate. And one of the things they said was, and they said, you don't get this in the media, is that, you know, gun violence, gun homicide, firearm-related homicide has gone down since 1993. And that's actually true, Chris. I looked. There was a study released on Tuesday, two studies, one from the Pew Research Center, another from the Federal Bureau of Statistics, and it says that more than 7,000 fewer firearms-related homicides in 2011 than in 1993. And the Pew Research Center found that only 12% of Americans today believe that the gun crime rate is lower today than it was in 1993. So there is a big difference in what actually is happening and what people think is happening.
Right. I suppose, and the big challenge is when you hear about something like Newtown that is so public and so present that we do we are talking more about gun violence, and I guess that's probably why we don't know about those numbers.
Exactly. And, of course, these big mass shootings that are so awful, they capture the interest. They get lots of media coverage, as they should. Another thing that there still are a lot of firearms-related deaths. I mean, there's more than 31,000 every year. Another interesting thing, Chris, I found out that most of these deaths are suicides. 6 out of 10 firearms-related deaths stems from suicide.
Right. It's interesting. Did you get a sense of I know that we had talked before, and you'd said that this group has seen a big spike in membership since January. Did you get a sense that was related to Newtown, or what the reason was that there are more people joining an organization like Gun Save Lives?
Well, they said there had been about a fifth. They almost doubled their membership since then, and we didn't ask him why, but there. They had some really interesting things to say just about the controversy and how the people that were at the meeting wanted to be represented for the people that they are, not the people that they're perceived to be. So I'm not sure if that had something to do with it, but I could see it definitely being, I mean, reading between the lines, I think I could definitely see it being a part of it.
So we had a conversation. We talked to 5 people before the meeting started. Then I came back and listened to the meeting. It was about a 2-hour meeting. There were about 200 people there, mostly men, mostly gray hair, looked like mostly white. There were about 10% women, and there were some children there. So that was who seemed to be there last night.
Well, we have these community conversations once a month with different organizations throughout the area that we cover at WYLL. And Kimberly, I mean, if someone is part of an organization and they think that a community conversation would be something that they should participate in, I mean, how do they reach out to WYLL?
That's right. They can email me at chronic@illinois.edu. That's K-R-A-N-I-C-H @illinois.edu.
And these are always valuable for us because they help us kind of set the priorities about what we're covering in our newsroom and let us know about what people are really thinking. So Kimberly Cronick, Lindsay Moon, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Chris.
You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine on WILL.